This is Greg Robertson again. Here I've got a new guest, Renwick. Renwick is from Improv, one of my favorite companies out there. And why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Hey, Greg. Well, I've been in technology for some time. I think we shared back-to-back booths in the 1996 NAR conference.
Yeah, that was a long time ago. What was the name of that company?
That was Flyerware. Never guess what we did. Which was actually kind of easy. People would hear the name and they would know what we did. And then we changed products and came out with the name Improv. And no one knows what we do. But the name Improv came from the concept of being efficient. And so being impressive quickly. So we just kind of crunched the name down. And it was the year 2000 before Google existed. So you really had to have a URL that people could remember or type in. And so, that's where we started. And we've been doing this for 16 years.
So what is Improv do? What does the platform do?
So we started with exactly that, a platform. And so it was essentially the equivalent of desktop publishing. And we called it for a period of time, webtop publishing. So you go into our platform and you can do all your flyers. Early on, we had what we called web commercials, which were flash animations. You can do websites, you could do just about anything, but the key was you had to do it. So an agent would have to log into the website and actually, select what they wanted and fill in the information and then decide where they wanted to distribute it. And we made that very easy.
Now how would you distribute Improv? Where would it be? Where would the agent go to find it? Do we need to log on to improv.com or?
So we had a improv.net because of course we went back to where there was supposedly a difference between Improv, between .coms and .nets. But we, probably a little over 10 years ago, we really changed our focus to being private labeled. So you might know us as the Remax Design Center. You might know us as the Coldwell Banker e-marketing system. Number of those private label enterprise level.
So this is something like it's an enterprise kind of solution that franchisors would install into their backends of their systems, right?
Yeah. We become one of the core technologies. We have solutions for brokers as well. But as an agent, you can't come to Improv and sign up for the service.
Now, I did a lot of work for Remax, as you know, back in the day and work with a lot of other franchisors. And I got to say, your solution is agents use it all the time. I remember seeing some of the usage stats and they might have the franchisor brokers might have all these other tools, but man, you guys got a lot of traffic as far as people using it and taking advantage of it more than like many of the other things out there. You guys are always usually number one or number two as far as most used kind of tool provided by the brokerage or the franchisor.
Yeah. I'd say that we thought that we had good usage and we did. Probably, 2, 3, 4x what normal tools would see. But we also saw a continuing decline, not just across us, but across other tools. And sort of, stepped back and said, well, what is this? Why the decline? And that's when we moved to automation. So we took the whole platform and made it available through an automated system. So the broker now says, when this happens, for example, a listing, I want a website for the property. I want social media pushes for these outlets. I want them distributed. I want a flyer. I want a postcard that goes to the printer and goes to 200 neighbors. I want a video that goes to YouTube or to our own video channel. And so we create all that stuff, given that trigger, and of course update it when it needs to be.
Do you think? I mean, I was talking to a previous guest, David, about concierge stuff and everything else. Are agents? Is it the fact that real estate agents are just lazy, or do you think this is the same kind of thing in any industry? That just people just don't do things, and that we. I mean, it just seems like. I mean, I only know real estate, but everywhere I go, it's like, well, we did it this way one way, but we discovered that agents wouldn't do anything, so we had to do it for them. I mean, that's just a narrative I hear across technology everywhere. I just wonder, is this just a real estate agent thing? Or do you think this is like, insurance brokers and mortgage guys and all these other guys have the same kind of problem?
So I think that's great. It's a great question. And the way that we view it is real estate is one of the only industries where the salesperson is responsible for conceptualizing and creating the marketing and distributing it.
So
you
true.
Don't see that in any other industry. And so what we're doing is providing really for the first time the ability for the broker or the franchise to take over that marketing. And that allows the agents to do what they need to be doing, which is nurturing their prospects, following up on leads,
smart,
closing deals.
Very smart. Yeah. That's very good insight. I think you're right. I mean, I think there's probably other industries like, I mean, I guess in a sense, like they're all sales, you know, title or mortgage or insurance salespeople. They kind of have the same thing, right? They're selling it, but they're also having to market themselves, right?
Right. But they get a lot of marketing support from their companies. So, you know, mortgage companies can create all of the collateral that they need to hand out. They're going to do advertising.
So maybe I shouldn't bash too much on the poor real estate agent who's got to do so much, right?
The real estate agents get a bad rap that way. Yeah, I used to get, when we first started and we were doing a lot of print, people would say, well, why are you doing that for real estate agents? They like ugly stuff. And I used to say, you know, if I had to sew my own shoes, they'd be pretty ugly.
Right.
But if I go to Nordstrom and pick from a bunch of nice stuff, yeah, I'm not going to. I'm going to go to Nordstrom Rack because I'm cheap, but...
Yeah, it seems like you guys, I mean, there is this whole trend of this marketing automation that's going on, has been going on a while, but seems like you guys were first to kind of identify it in this market to do those types of things. And then, you know, the other thing that I love about you guys is that, as you said, a lot of times some of the stuff that was put out by a lot of agents and brokerages were just, ugh, and your designs are, you know, fantastic, right? Very professional, very well done. So it just makes those agents look great, right?
Thanks. That's important to us. It's part of our culture is the quality. And we actually push that down into the quality of the code and into our QA development because yeah, you have to be proud of it.
So you guys are based out of Seattle, right?
Yeah.
So it's, I mean, it, you know, you've got a platform. I mean, sure, you have developers and everything else, but a lot of it's got to be like designers too, right? I mean,
yes,
it's got to be a big part of your workforce there.
Yeah. We have almost as many designers as we do developers.
Right.
And what surprises everyone is we have a huge QA team. And so we've actually had investors in and I say, oh, your QA team is out of balance. You've got too many testers. And my response is always, yes, but look at our customer service team. It's two people for 260,000 agents.
Right.
Because we focus on that.
Well, I think it's an enterprise solution also, right? So when you're going to deploy this to every RE/MAX agent in the country, I mean, you want to make sure the damn thing works, right? So,
oh, yes.
Yeah. especially on automation, right? So if there's a bug in that auto, if you made it so super efficient to like propagate something that's broken so quickly too, right?
So yeah, and the automation is interesting because it's a big hammer. And if you miss, you can do some damage. So we were looking at numbers and looking at more efficient ways to do things. And I was talking to a company about, you know, getting some help maybe and you know, some options for video. And the guy said, well, how many videos do you do? I said, I don't know, you know, 20,000, 30,000. And so I shared that with our CTO and he laughed and he says, yeah, last month, 340,000.
So, yeah, that's okay. Way to keep in touch with your business. Yeah. Right.
And so, well, I mean, that's just one product. And so we generate millions of, we call advertising creative pieces of creative and distribute them every month.
Yeah. And the weird thing is that you do so much of that, but it's funny because I don't think a lot of people really know of you guys because it's all white labeled, right?
Mostly.
Right. Yes. So a lot of times these things go out there, but it's not like by Imprev or, you know, those kind of things. It's by RE/MAX. It's by, you know, Real Living. It's by whoever, right?
Yeah. But what's interesting, I was just on a conversation with a company that was talking about creating their own version for their clients. It was actually a software company. And I said, well, you know, we can white label it and you can call it whatever you want. And they said, well, we want to make sure that people know it's Imprev. And that was such a great compliment. I mean, I was like,
you want a what?
Okay, yeah. Well, name it what you want, and you know, we can do powered by Imprev. But that was nice.
Yeah. So how long in business now? I mean,
so as Imprev, basically January of 2000.
Right on, dude. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, really, 16 years, and then I mean, you kind of just changed the name and changed you pivoted a little bit, but it's really it's you since Flyerware, right?
So, yeah, a little different. I mean, I like to say that we burned the ships. You know, we decided we were not doing desktop software anymore in Well, it was July, right before July 4th weekend of 99, I let go of the whole team and spent some time going, what do I want to do? How do I want to do this? And then decided to make it a web-based solution and much broader.
Yeah. I think about the space. I mean, you know it as good as anybody. Not a lot of people out there can say that. Certainly for me, I think since 2000, I was Eddie Neighborhoods once, and then we started this. So it's like CMA software, all of them, right? I mean, pretty much. But I mean, that's right. Fantastic. I look at like some of the guys out there, like, you know, one that always impressed me is just longevity wise is Rapatoni, I think is 50 years or 40 years, you know, just, you know, I think Nixon was the president when they started that company, right? But I mean, just to keep a technology company along as you guys have had them, that's fantastic, dude.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think we, you know, bringing that up, there are things that you don't expect. So you don't expect to have to rewrite your software over and over. And you end up learning to write it in ways that anticipate rewriting it and which portions need to be rewritten and not rewritten. And of course, the technology is helping with the you know, the API based, and you know, now it's getting beyond me. These young guys that are developing are just, you know, they're so smart.
Yeah.
They do a good job.
Yeah. So you're like a vendor OG, an old gangster. Now I know if I remember correctly, that was on like a 3.5-inch diskette you would install it on, right?
Well, if I remember correctly, you gave me a hard time because I developed it on a Macintosh.
That's right.
Well, that was bad. And I see some Macs here in your studio.
I switched, so you you got me on that one for sure, right?
It was a time.
With the other stuff is like, you know, one thing that impresses me about you a lot of times is you know, we've had conversations in the past, and it seems like you've got more of a work-life balance set up than I ever thought about, right? And, you know, I was lamenting how I don't think I'm too much of a strategic thinker a lot of times. I'm more tactical because I just don't – I'm always just hustling, I guess is what I would say. But somebody could call it hustling. Somebody could call it just being on a treadmill too.
But it's hard work too.
Yeah. I mean, can you speak to that kind of, I mean, a bit?
Yeah, I can. I mean, when I started the Flyerware software, I actually wrote a number of applications for different parts of the industry. And that was great selling software. You know, you write it once and you sell the floppies. But as the developer, I couldn't get away from it. So for Imprev, I didn't write a single line of code.
Right.
And there's well over 1 million lines in that stack. I imagine we've probably written 5 million
right
over the years. But the work-life balance, the whole reason for Imprev was to have a cool place to work. You know, the things you need to do with that. You know, I think Simon Simiak is his name, is talking about having the why of your business.
Yeah.
And so we went through the exercise, you know, why? Why do we have Imprev? And it really came down to have a great place to work. But it turns out that to have a great place to work, you have to have a product that you believe in. You have to have good relationships with your customers. They have to like you, because if your customers don't like you, then it sucks. And you have to make money, because if you don't make money, you don't generally stay in business.
Well, you know, not nowadays, right? You can get $1 billion and just burn that down to the ground, dude.
We've been through that, right? They do go away.
They do go away.
It does go away. Yeah. So that's you know, we kind of focus at 4:30. The office is pretty empty.
Wow.
You know, it's 7 a.m., 8 a.m., it's bustling, and people are focused. You know, they work really hard, they have fun, and then they're gone. You know, they have lives. I've got a designer who does weddings on the side, and a developer who has a photography business on the side. So, yeah.
Yeah, that side hustle. I just love the game so much. I love that hustle, right? And you know, I should take some time more to kind of just back off of that. But, you know, I'm competitive and I want to get out there. And
you've got way too much energy.
So. Well, I don't know about that. I mean, you know, like you said, we're all getting older here. But I want to go forward, kind of work at that, you know, taking some time to reflect and like think about things. And, you know, haven't been traveling except, you know, here in a wonderful Hawaii.
Yeah.
That's gotten me kind of like a caught up with a lot of things and that kind of stuff. I just wish, again, you know, more of that strategic things that we could kind of come up with. I think we do think of stuff like that, but it's just not, it's more as it, as it's not like a separate thing. We're like, okay, let's, you know, let's slow down here. Let's take a break and like understand what, are we doing the right things and those kind of things. And
see, but I'd argue that you guys do that because you've come out with a number of great products.
Yeah.
And I really like the direction that you're
yeah. going. Yeah. Well, I mean, well, maybe we're just damn lucky. Who knows, right?
Well, you're smart. I mean, you've got, you know, I think one of the things, if I look back and said, what are mistakes that I've made? Not having a partner was a mistake.
Yeah.
Trying to carry this, you know, that's alone is really,
dude, yeah.
I really mean, tough.
I mean, I've, you know, Dan and I have been partners since, I think it's 25 years coming up in April next year. Oh. So, and, you know, in business, right. And this would be the third kind of company we've been working together. So it's been great. And I, you know, we never really have had any big issues at all. Or we've all, you know, we have a good trust. I mean, that's a hard, it's not only having a partner, it's having the right partner.
Yeah. It's right? very but, difficult.
I don't know how you know, guys like you do it, like they're on their own. And there's like a whole other contingency of people that think that, you know, having a co-founder is crazy, you know?
Well, there's actually some latest stuff from some of the big venture capitalists are they won't invest in a company that doesn't have partners. Mm-hmm. And the reason, if there's not a co-founder, that if you aren't able to sell someone else on your idea, how are you going to be able to sell customers?
Yeah, right? No kidding, right?
Yeah. It's, yeah. So that's a good point. Yeah, I think it makes sense. You know, I've been able to do it because I've been lucky enough to have some really good employees. You know, and I use the word employee, but I don't introduce people as my employees. They're coworkers, they're team members. Yeah. A lot of times I introduce them, especially my executive assistant, as my boss. So,
right. You know, I got a couple of those guys in my office too, are telling me what to do all the time. So, you know, just like it might be a little bit meta, but, you know, you guys work on, and part of our business too, is these kind of larger deals, these enterprise deals mm-hmm. that take a while to close. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, they do.
And this is something that I try to tell my sales team. It's really, to me, it's all about relationships, right? And it's hard, and especially in a larger sense. I mean, these things will take out a long time, but I mean, it's the relationships you build to kind of get to the point where when they're ready, you're there, right? What's your kind of philosophy on these kind of larger enterprise deals and how you go about nurturing them and getting them? I mean, there's got to be a certain amount of like your takeaways too, right? I mean, getting somebody to switch from something else.
Yeah, that's a tough one. That actually kind of percolates up a little emotion because they are big and you work hard to deliver, but you're always, you know, you're always, you know, what's next,
right?
Because as we may be replacing someone, there's somebody else that wants to replace us. I mean, you know, our competitor's best prospect list is our customer list, right?
Right.
And that's fine. It keeps us on our toes. And I, you know, I always feel like we should deliver the best product. And we have one client that really wanted to go much more into the CRM than we do. I mean, we really focus on the marketing and the advertising. There are a lot of good CRM companies out there. Yeah. And we work with them, right? With our APIs, we plug in and we share data. And I had to talk to, you know, one of the people on my team when I said, you know, we're going to not go down that path and we're going to help them move on to another company. And I said, well, what can we do to save that? And I said, we're not going to, because it's not the right thing for them or for us. Right. I don't want to develop something that's not right for a broader group of our customers as well as for our vision.
Yeah.
And I don't want to take a client along when something else might be a better solution for them.
And we have the same kind of things. Like I'll go to Dan, well, it just needs to do this in order to, you know, for us to get this thing. Right. And those are the ones we have the most passionate fights about. It's like, he's like, it's ridiculous. We're not doing that. If we do that, then there's a slippery slope that happens where all these other things have happened. Right. So,
well, I think that's a great point, because there is a slippery slope. And people look at, I mean, you can look at that slippery slope a couple of ways, that you're being dragged, you know, by the customers. They're, you know, some people will say they're never happy. They want more and more and more. But the way I prefer to see it is that you do such a good job providing features A, B, and C that they would love it if you would do D for them, because they know you'll do a good job. And then it's up to you to decide that, you know, D's just not what we want to do. And I think that's, you know, what's great to have these relationships like you and I have, you know, somebody says to me, you know, I want you to make a CMA. It's like, that's not what we do. I mean, we're marketing, advertising, we'll do a lot of cool stuff, but I know where there are really good CMAs.
Right.
And so, and then we can work together with companies like that.
Yeah. I mean, we did that with Boston Logic, where they were looking a buyer build strategy, and we showed them with our API, we could pretty much seamlessly integrate with them. And that's what that's the path they chose.
You've got an API?
Oh, yeah. I got
tons of them. We'll have to talk about that.
I got tons of them.
I think you kept sending me the email. Here's our API.
But so as I kind of look at it, I mean, the whole thing about that, you know, keeping things simple. I mean, that's the one thing about our stuff that I think is the same thing, where there's so much things that, let's say, for instance, a auto prospecting system from an MLS can do than what Cloud Streams can do, our mm-hmm. product, right? But it's so hard to use, you know, well, does it, can it send out, we only want to send out alerts the first Tuesday of every month, right? Cloud Streams doesn't do that. Well, yeah, you're right. It doesn't do that. It's never going to do that, because if you got to imagine the UI to give that much flexibility, no one would ever use it, right?
Right.
The trick is to go, where is that line of what functionality do I stop at, right? And it's just a mind game, and it takes a lot of thought to kind of where to draw that line a lot of times. And that's for me. I struggle with that. Dan has more of a clear vision of those types of things, but I really struggle. Like, I want a deal done, right? I want to get a deal.
Yeah.
And like, whatever, just add it, man. I mean, you know, who cares, right? I'm not that way, but I mean, there's a lot of times I say no right away, but I think Dan's a lot better at that than I am.
I think people miss that with every feature that you add, you're taking away from all the other features. And so we've got a second line. So we've got the line of, you know, what do we show to the user, right? And that has to be easy to use. One of our clients, when they first started, they went out and did road trip, and were, you know, showing to their brokers and the agents. And they came away and they said, you know, the first time somebody gets on the platform, they can use it. The second time, they're comfortable. And the third time they're on it, they're an expert. And we thought, that's exactly how it should be, because with most software, agents aren't on it every day. So you can't rely on an icon. You have to tell them what something is. You have to make it very easy and very obvious. And so I think we've done a good job doing that. But with some of the complexity that we allow, or the features that are allowed, like knowing where to get data from. You know, do I get this because the broker says every piece of marketing has to have this specific disclosure? Do I get it there? Now, do I let the agent change that if they want to? Is it overwritten in this situation? So we have all of that capability, but if you showed that to the agent, it would be overwhelming. Yeah. You wouldn't be able to use it. So we have this complex administration tool that, unfortunately for my poor, you know, customer support team, we don't spend as much time making the UI easy as we do for the agents. But it's where is the complexity, and being careful not to start down, as you said, that slippery slope where you get feature creep and then you lose what people loved about your software to begin with.
Totally.
Yeah.
And I think for you guys, though, like, automation has got to just eliminate a ton of things, right? So they don't have to know how to use it. If they're going to press a button saying, you know, create a video or do these kind of things, I mean, boom, it's done, right?
We call that the easy button, and we got rid of that. So there is the easy button where you can push a button, but we're, you know, we deal with the brokerage or the franchise. And so in the broker level, you know, the broker, what I say is, you know, take the agent who is the very best with listings, who can take a listing and generate 10 new listings from it. Because that's what it's about. I mean, our stuff doesn't even get sell the listings. You know, the MLS and the other brokers are going to sell the listing, but the marketing and the advertising of a listing are going to generate your own organic leads, right? So you take the agent who's the best of that. You may have 500 agents. Who's number one and number two? Now, what do they do? Document it. And we can codify it. So if on day one, they create, you know, these websites and they post them in these places, you know, we might have somebody who wants to have a Vietnamese website posted to this location, and they also want to have a Chinese language website posted to this other location. All of these should be capturing leads. Plus, of course, the YouTube video, and maybe in multiple languages. We can do all of that, but you just have to find out what you want to have happen. And so you're taking the best practices and then spreading it across everyone. And that's cool. the beauty of automation.
Yeah, that's cool. So, I mean, what trends do you see out there going on in real estate or real estate technology that are kind of piquing your interest?
You know, what's really interesting to me, this is going to sound sort of, you know, like, yeah, we've heard this, is big data. But it's not the way that people are looking at big data. It's being able to take a piece of data, one piece of data from the property, and using that, pull all sorts of valid information. So if you decide that, you know, really you should market a property based on demographics, and, you know, then you go and get a database of all the zip codes and you have all the demographics, and then you know that this property, these are the type of people that live there. And so now you can then overlay aspiration and you can market appropriately to the group that drives BMWs and Lexuses, as opposed to the group that drives Priuses and Teslas. The Prius and Tesla group may actually be a higher earning group, but you don't market to them like you market to the people driving the BMWs and Audis, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so that's when big data becomes really interesting. I'm not so excited about mining it and learning trends. I think that real estate is too unique. There are too many SKUs, right? Every house is different. If you've ever, and I know anybody that's shown a house, has walked into a house, they all have their own smell. You know, try putting that on the internet.
Right.
Probably within 5 years, because you should be able to digitally transmit a smell. I mean, you can digitally transmit just about anything, right? But there's...
Well, here we are.
Think about it, right?
No, hey. I mean, you've said some sort of thing I've never heard before, which is real estate is going to, at one point, you're going to actually like click a button. Part of your IDX feed will be a smell.
But
smell-o-vision.
I know. But when you talk about the uniqueness of a property, if you ever walked in a property and you smell it, you're just like, no way.
Yeah. It's all these nuances, definitely.
Yeah.
Sensory and otherwise, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, so big data, I've been hearing that a lot. I mean, there's other companies out there like SmartZip and things that are kind of doing some of those things, of kind of taking some big data and identifying what they think houses are going to be for sale. I know other people are kind of talking about, you know, how your habits on the internet are being kind of monitored. And then, you know, all of a sudden you start getting things in the mail, right, for what you've been looking on online. I mean, there's a whole cast of characters out there working on things like that. A lot of stuff that was very scary.
I think it was Brad Inman at a conference this last year or two said that Google knew that his daughter was pregnant before she did.
Yeah.
Or because it was
an example
of
that, not his, but
okay. Yeah. And now
that's just bizarre.
Yeah. And now they're starting to identify some diseases that are fairly rare, but the searches for the symptoms together give you this information. Yeah. And so
what is this bump? Right. Yeah. Then, oh God. On my ex, right? Ouch.
Yeah, so I think it's interesting. I think it's, you know, like anything. I used to, I don't know if you remember, I actually used to speak. I'm a little more of an introvert than that. As you know, you had to apply alcohol to me to get me up here. But I would give a talk on blogging, and it was basically to blog or not to blog, and you know, it came down to read a blog every day for 30 days. And if at the end of 30 days you still want to blog, hey, knock yourself out, right? But what I would say, because obviously I was kind of like, that isn't the best use for everyone. Obviously, for a few people, they're very successful. But the underlying technology, the RSS, the really simple syndication, I said, that is something. I don't know what the world's going to do with it. This is what I used to say 10 years ago. I don't know what the world is going to do with it, but maybe longer than 10 years ago. But it's going to be really cool. Well, guess what Facebook is based on? Guess what all of these things
podcasting
that are just,
is, yeah, you know, in
they're
a sense,
all yeah. on this platform. And how many people blog? Well, now we blog in Facebook.
Yeah.
You know, we blog in Twitter. We blog, but most people don't have their own blogs.
Yeah. It is, I've been doing Vendor Alley since, I looked at it, 2004. I was really surprised by that, right? But there's less and less of those kind of things out there. I love it as a medium for myself. It's just, I like the writing and I like trying to develop my own voice in it. And then this, what we're doing right now, this podcasting thing is like, I enjoy listening to podcasts and I want to see if I can kind of extend that into this kind of thing.
Where I was going was not against blogging, but it was the RSS technology. We didn't know it would be.
Right.
And so what we're doing with big data right now, like predicting whether a house is going to sell or not, we'll probably laugh at in 10 years because we're doing so much more relevant, more powerful, more effective use of the big data. So that's the point.
I see what you're saying.
It doesn't mean it'll go away. It'll just be, oh, this is what we could do with it. And we didn't realize it. Right.
Yeah. So why don't you tell everybody how they can reach you? You know, if there's a big broker or a franchisor, what's the best way of reaching Improv, or just if they want to follow you and see what you're doing, what are those best ways of doing that?
Well, it's tough to follow me because I don't blog and I don't do anything like that. I have four daughters. They keep me pretty busy, although the oldest two are now married. So I'm hoping for grandchildren.
Two Marines,
soon.
I hear.
Yes. They're both married to Marines. So so I no longer have to protect my daughters. Yes. I, as I say, I now have badass sons. Yeah, so that was not genetic. But we're easy to get a hold of, improv.com to see just a little bit. But so the story goes, the cobbler's kids go without shoes. Our website isn't probably the best reflection of what we do for our clients.
Oh, it's good. I'm saying that. I always say that.
So, and then you can reach me through, improv.com at any point. I love talking to people. I love talking about ideas.
Recently I just, was reading one of your reports that you put out. And I think you had one report about brokers and upstream.
Oh, right? Yeah.
And then this most recent one was about, brokers as far as how they wanted or perceived how the market was going, right?
That's one of my favorite things that we get to do.
And I love that because from a guy like me, like that Zillow came out with that consumer trends report and you guys are coming with it. It's like free research for companies like us. Like you've done all this great work and then we can take that and I can kind of apply that towards, what products we're working on and how our messaging and everything else. But tell me a little bit about that, about this.
So we have this, so I give a little context, this thought leader survey. We do it twice a year, once a year in the spring. Sometimes we fall behind and it's closer to summer. We survey on a topic that's trending, right? So this summer we did it on the project upstream and it was great. The information that we got was just wonderful, interesting. We were amazed at how much the industry is rooting for Project Upstream. It was unbelievable.
Oh God, this could be an entire new episode if we want to go down.
When I say the industry, I mean brokers. Right. So that's all we include in our survey. Mostly larger brokers, but we do have representation up and down the scale, which we disclose in the reports. And then at the end of the year or in the fall, we run the same survey each year, not the one that we've done previously that year, but annually we run the same survey about the feelings about the economy.
Right.
And it's great as we've been doing this longer and longer to see the trends that develop and the positioning. Now this year was really tough because, it's a fall survey and we knew that the election would change the survey because it was down. There's a lot less confidence. Interestingly, and this happens each year, the closer the topic is, so we say, how do you feel about the world economy, the US, the state, local, your town? It goes from very low confidence to much, much higher confidence the closer you get to where someone is.
Yeah. Interesting. All real estate is local.
Yeah. And that's really interesting. But doing it right before the election, we've kind of talked about even doing a follow-up after the election just to see what that was. Because this has been an interesting month or two. Yeah.
Well, I'll put a link. I've already blogged about it on Vendor Alley, but I'll put another link in the show notes as far as where you can kind of see that. You put together a hell of a nice infographic on.
Well, that's what we do, right?
Yeah.
That's true, right? We're a design
firm. You got all those damn graphic designers. You might as well put them to use, right? Well, Remick, thank you so much. I mean, I appreciate you being one of the first guys on my my new podcast here. And again, you guys are one of my favorite companies. And I know just talking to your customers of how pleased they are with what the products you deliver and how you deliver them. And I know they're used and loved by agents. So, and 2000, man, congratulations. That's just fantastic. As a vendor that can be, you know, around that long in technology, just great. Fantastic. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me, and anything I can do for you.
Right on. Okay, dude. Okay. Let's go hit the bar, right?
Mai Tai time.
All right. Bye.